Well, first of all, thank you for coming in a half hour early. I have an obligation to swear in the legislature, which I'm excited about, the Assembly at 11 and the Senate at 12. So thank you for coming at 9:30. Now, this argument will be a full hour. Each side gets a half hour. Does anybody have a question about that? Okay. Mr. Bice, let me call the case first of all. This is case number, there's two cases consolidated, 70050 and 70452, Resorts versus District Court Okada. Real party in interest, Mr. Bice.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. May it please the court, Todd Bice on behalf of Wynn Resorts. I'd like to reserve approximately 10 minutes of my time for rebuttal. There is a common theme that runs through both of the district court's orders that are the subject of these parallel writ proceedings, and that is, when does Nevada's business judgment rule apply? And the reason that that is important for both of these orders is that the business judgment rule determines what sort of information is relevant for the court's consideration, and whether or not the court or the jury, or in this case, the party, can get behind the advice information that the board considered, as opposed to whether or not, on the face of the business judgment rule, the board is entitled to consider those types of matters. The district court ruled, at the urging of the Okada parties, that Nevada's business judgment rule does not apply to the corporation. It is merely, according to the district court, a limitation on liability for individual directors. We maintain that is the core error in the district court's analysis when it comes to these documents. And that is what is being challenged to you ultimately by way of both of these petitions. Let me just sort of briefly recite why we're here. As the Wynn Resorts Articles of Incorporation provide a provision for dealing with any shareholder that the board, in its sole discretion, deems to be unsuitable. For any gaming licensee, let alone one that, you know, is publicly traded and employs thousands and thousands of individuals, maintenance of good regulatory scanning is obviously of importance. One's license is the lifeblood of a gaming company. The Nevada revised statutes authorize Nevada corporations to include within their articles provisions dealing for the redemption of shares. That is what the board has done, or that is what Wynn Resorts has done in Article 7 of its Articles of Incorporation. Under Article 7, if the board makes a determination in good faith that it considers any shareholder to be unsuitable, i.e., likely to jeopardize an existing or even future licensing status, the board's decision is deemed to be final, conclusive, and binding upon the shareholder. In this particular case, the board unanimously voted that Mr. Okada and his affiliates were unsuitable. This grew out of some rather shocking statements by Mr. Okada, one of them at a board meeting where Mr. Okada suggested that greasing the skids with government regulators in Asia is an acceptable way of doing business for himself. The chairman of our compliance committee, former district attorney, former attorney general, former governor of the state of Nevada, Robert Miller, was very alarmed by this statement and had, as chairman of the compliance committee, directed that an investigation had to be done and whether or not Mr. Okada had breached his fiduciary duties to the corporation. Because after all, he was pursuing business in the Philippines, and the Philippines, unfortunately for the Filipino people, is a country that has a reputation of widespread governmental corruption. In order to pursue that, there were prior investigations that had been done, but the last one was conducted by a law firm called Freese Forkin, headed up by Louis Free, former federal United States District Court judge and former director of the FBI. Also, the company heard from gaming attorneys David Araj and Jeffrey Silver, Gordon Silver, and Mr. Araj being of the Brownstein firm. After the board heard from Mr. Free, considered his report, heard from Mr. Araj and Mr. Silver as well as others, the board unanimously voted to redeem the shares. And of course, our position is that those decisions are final, conclusive, and binding on Mr. Okada. That brings us to the district court's, what we maintain is the principal error and one urged by the Oktata parties, and that is that the business judgment rule does not apply to that determination because it is only a limitation on liability for individual directors. I would submit that that position runs directly counter to this court's decision in the Schoen matter. In Schoen, and I'll just quote it because it was quoted directly out of the CD decision from the Nevada Supreme, or the Delaware Supreme Court, the business judgment rule serves as a powerful presumption in favor of action taken by the directors in that a decision made by a loyal and informed board will not be overturned. This court has never said, and quite frankly, no court has ever said that the business judgment rule is merely a limitation on liability for individual board members. In fact, we cite to this court multiple cases from the Delaware authorities, Delaware Supreme Court in the Paramount versus Time matter, as well as the Delaware Chancery Court in both the Vanhata case as well as the Verithin case. And all of those matters, the courts confirmed, the Delaware authorities confirmed, that the business judgment rule is governs the board's decision on behalf of the corporation. The Oktata parties cite two cases that are completely distinguishable and have nothing to do with the board's discretionary decision under its articles of incorporation in dealing with internal corporate affairs. Both of the cases that they cite, the McCarthy decision as well as the Goth Studio decision, involve claims asserted by third parties for breach of contract, unrelated to internal corporate affairs, unrelated to the articles of incorporation, and in no way involve any discretionary decision by the board. And again, I would make this one final point on this. In NRS 78-138 sub 7, the Nevada legislature specifically provides when individual board members are or are not personally liable for the decisions of the board member. That statute would be completely superfluous if, in fact, the Oktata parties were right, but the entire statute of Section 138 is simply designed as a limitation on liability. When properly recognized about what the business judgment rule applies to, it then becomes, we submit, the core problem with the district court's waiver claims in its ruling with respect to both the Brownstein documents as well as the three documents. And let me turn to that. The district court says that the last phrase of 78-138 sub 2 requires or it constitutes a waiver of the attorney-client privilege because, this is the way the district court phrased it, the only way that the Oktata parties can get to that part of the statute is by having all information that was provided to the board, regardless of its source or even potentially privileged nature. What that statute, however, is dealing with is, again, whether or not directors had some information that made their consideration of the experts that they were hearing from, be it Friess-Forkin, Brownstein-Flagg, Gordon and Silver, unwarranted. The question is whether, under the business judgment rule, is whether the board is entitled to rely upon the advice or input from a former federal judge and former director of the FBI on such a thing. Under the business judgment rule, it does not matter whether former director Free was right or wrong, or whether or not Brownstein was right or wrong, or Gordon and Silver was right or wrong. The standard under the business judgment rule does not allow the party to, quote, get behind the decision and the advice and input that they were given. And what they're seeking to do here, and what the district court has said they are allowed to do, by misapplying the judgment rule, is impeach the wisdom of the input that the board heard from. There is no dispute that the board received input and advice from Friess-Forkin, Gordon Silver, and Brownstein Hyatt. And we submit that these are precisely the types of experts with expertise and specialized knowledge that the Nevada legislature wants boards to hear from in making business decisions on behalf of the corporation and on behalf of the shareholders. In fact, I would submit that if Wynn Resorts had made the decision that it made and had not heard from these types of experts, the Oktata parties would be screaming from the mountaintop about how the decision cannot be valid because they didn't hear from these types of people. The district court's order in that regard completely undermines the purpose of the business judgment rule by saying that if you consider experts, legal advice, regulatory input from these types of experts, information that is privileged, in order to claim the benefits of the business judgment rule, you must waive it. You must waive all privilege. And that's what the district court's order effectively does. And I would submit, members of this court, that if that is the law of the state of Nevada, Nevada will not be a leading state of corporate formation and corporate governance. One that it will instead be one that boards, shareholders actually flee from. Because if the consequence of the business judgment rule is if you consider legal advice or you consider legal input, you have thereby waived the privilege as a consequence of invoking the business judgment rule. Now, let me turn then. We believe that is the fundamental flaw that underlies both of these decisions, and let me explain why in dealing with the two categories of documents. The first I'll deal with are the Brownstein documents. Again, I would submit that with respect to that, those documents, the Okada parties have largely now, even though they are the ones that encourage the district court to take this position under the business judgment rule, it seems that they have largely recognized that error and are now running from it. Because in their opposition or their answering to the writ, they largely don't address it. It's their sort of final throwaway argument. What they instead tried to argue is that this court should affirm the district court's ruling on an alternative theory, one of waiver, under citing the Wardley versus the Second Judicial District. I think that there are a number of problems with this new alternative theory being asserted in their answering brief. First, as this court has said before in the Las Vegas Sands Jacobs decision, questions about at issue waiver are not properly decided for the first time on a writ petition. Those are fact-intensive inquiries that need to be presented to the district court. The district court needs to make a finding and needs to make a record for which this court can review. That has not happened here because the district court took the position that it didn't need to address any of the questions about that potential waiver or arguments of waiver by simply invoking the fact that all privileges waived under the district by invoking the business judgment rule. And the other problem with that is that the Brownstein and Hyatt documents, there are claims of both attorney-client as well as work product privilege, completely addressed by the district court because of its position that it didn't need to differentiate those privileges because of the waiver, supposedly, that Wynn was committed by invoking the business judgment rule. Secondarily, the problem with that alternative argument is that it's contradictory. On the one hand, they claim that, when I say they, the Okada parties claim that Wynn Resorts has already affirmatively used the gaming advice in testimony. I would submit they can't cite anywhere where that happened. And in fact, under this court's decision in Leslie, this court has said that in order to make testimonial use constitute a waiver, the testimonial use must be wide enough in scope and deep enough in substance to constitute a significant part of the privileged communications in order to constitute a waiver. That has not happened here. And in fact, we cite multiple other decisions, acknowledge that they are from the federal courts, both the Libby Glass case as well as the Joy Global, both of which are federal court decisions. The courts pointed out that opaque references to the existence of attorney-client information do not constitute a waiver, and they cannot constitute a waiver when the court considers the proper context of the business judgment rule. By definition, the board has to acknowledge under the statute that it received legal input. It received advice from experts in these highly technical areas of expertise, highly technical legal matters. In order to acknowledge that, which is what the Delaware courts have pointed out, they need to acknowledge that they received that input. But simply acknowledging received input and that they this cannot constitute a waiver of privilege, because if it did, then every board, whether it would be a merger transaction, a complex tax matter, a potential antitrust matter, where the boards routinely receive legal advice and legal input in exercising their discretion, have to make decisions. If the district court's decision were to stand, All privilege is thereby waived any time a board considers those types of matters in order to proceed. That, at least would submit, cannot be the law of this state, or should not be the law of this state. Alternatively, they say, well, you are necessarily going to have to enlist the attorney-client information that the board considered. And that, again, I think evidences the problem with the district court's business judgment ruling. Because by definition, we do not by necessity have to waive the privilege in order to invoke the business judgment rule. Again, it does not matter in the business judgment rule context whether the advice we receive was good advice, bad advice, the most solid of advice that one can give. What matters is whether or not it came from people that the board is entitled to rely upon in considering these types of matters. And there's no question, I would submit, that the qualifications of Director Free, former Director Free, Attorney Arajan, and Attorney Silver, they are not seeking to challenge their qualifications. They instead want to impeach and challenge whether or not they were right or wrong in their assessment for the board. Next, let me turn, with the few minutes remaining, to the Free documents. The district court, interestingly, did not stick with its position about waiver due to the business judgment rule with respect to the Free documents. If in fact that ruling was right, I don't know why the district court needed to deviate from that ruling with respect to the Brownstein documents. The Free documents were also considered by the board. But instead, the district court took the position that because the Free report was attached to the complaint, that means a wholesale waiver of all privilege. And we submit there are a number of problems with that. The first of all is work product privilege. The district court said it didn't apply with respect to the Free documents because Free's report was not prepared. It didn't use this work terminology, but I would submit this is the guiding principle of it. It wasn't prepared primarily for purposes of litigation. First of all, standard, which is again, I think, the next sort of significant issue that this court needs to decide in the context of these petitions, is articulated in the Kidder-Peabody decision, a federal district court decision, that we would submit has been largely repudiated by the federal courts. The Alden decision of the Second Circuit seems to be one of the most off-sided decisions, and it makes the point that Kidder-Peabody case is just wrong. That the standard is not primary. The standard is whether or not the document serves a dual purpose. Was litigation contemplated at the time? Because of the litigation, was the report, the prospect of potential litigation, was the report prepared, the documents prepared? In this case, I would submit that really is not a close question when the proper legal standard is applied. Free Sporkin was engaged, and the first terms of its engagement in the report it prepared was whether or not Mr. Okada had violated his fiduciary duties to the corporation. That's the type of matter that is, by definition, I would submit, work product. There was no question, and in fact, the Okada parties acknowledged this in briefs to the district court, is that it was obvious by the time that Mr. Free had been engaged, or his firm had been engaged, that litigation could ensue. It was obvious. When properly applied, Wynn Resorts submits that the work product privilege would apply. The work product privilege, the concepts of waiver under that privilege are fundamentally different, and the federal courts have made this clear that different analysis and different waiver analysis applies. Because here, the district court has essentially ruled wholesale any documents from Free Sporkin, including their opinion work product, has to be produced under the terms of its current order. The federal courts have said, even in the rare case under the U.S. Supreme Court's decision of Noble, even in the rare case when, in fact, the work product privilege has been waived, that waiver has to be very narrowly construed, and it does not reach core opinion work product by the lawyers that were involved. Again, the district court did not even conduct that analysis because it simply concluded no work product applies because the Free report was prepared for a business purpose, not primarily for a litigation purpose. What the district court ultimately said is dealing with attorney-client.
In order for this court to view this question, on this aspect of the case or of these writ petitions, isn't it necessary for the district court to undertake the full evaluation of the because of test and determine under the totality of the circumstances whether the report, pre-report, was prepared in anticipation of litigation for purposes of board use in making the decision? 401 addresses the question about waiver.
Justice Hardesty, I think that is right. Our position is that the because of test needs to be applied, which was not applied by the district court here. And in order to apply that test, the district court needs to evaluate the totality, using your terminology, of the circumstances surrounding Freese Forkin's work, why it was engaged, and what it did. And the district court, again, I would submit, sort of short-circuited that analysis by simply saying, wasn't primarily prepared for litigation, it was for a business purpose about the redemption, therefore work product doesn't apply. But just because something serves, as the federal courts say, a dual purpose, both serving a business purpose as well as being created in contemplation of litigation, means that the privilege should apply. That's fundamentally distinct from this court's decision in the Columbia Hospital case, which said that the information that was prepared would have been prepared in the ordinary course of business in largely the same form. It was pre-printed forms of all matters that would have been created. And so with that, I would like to reserve the rest of my time unless the court has other questions for me.
You have about 9 minutes and 10 seconds left.
Thank you.
Mr. Morris.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thank you for the opportunity to address these two petitions. And let me say at the outset, I sound a little hoarse. It's because I have a cold. And I may have to turn to Kleenex from time to time. But nonetheless, I want to address the merits of this. And I'd like to start with this observation. Mr. Bison misspoke a moment ago. What he said to you was that what's happened here is the judge has found a wholesale waiver of privilege. If you look at the record underlying this case, and you have it before you, you will see that the judge said just the opposite. The judge said this is not a wholesale waiver. And that is consistent with other remarks that she made when she concluded that the documents underlying the Brownstein-Hyatt advice had to be disclosed, because she said, and you can find this at the petitioner's portion of the record, page 001238, she said, I have made on the limited issue an at-issue waiver, a limited at-issue waiver. We're not talking about wholesale waiver here that overturns statutory law and case law across the country and renders Nevada an outlier among courts that address corporate control issues and the application of the business judgment rule. She didn't say that all privileges have been waived. And with that as a preface to what we're dealing with, or at least from our standpoint, what we're dealing with here this morning, I'd like to say this to you. Wynn Resorts has spent an inordinate amount of time trying to present to you a dispute that does not exist. We have here only a simple discovery case. Two cases, really. We're talking about discovery that arises out of and is ordered by the district court as a consequence of not a misunderstanding of the business judgment rule, not an inappropriate application of Nevada Revised Statute 78-138, sub 2, We are talking about voluntary waivers of attorney-client privilege and work product privilege. The question for you is, I submit, did the district court commit clear error? Did she abuse her discretion and commit an error of law, a clear error of law, in ordering the production of information as a consequence of the two waivers we're talking about here?
Mr. Morris, I may interrupt you, please.
Yes.
What is not at all clear to me, and maybe you can address this in the district court judge's orders, is the purpose surrounding the requested discovery. And that does depend on an interpretation and application of business judgment. Is the purpose to second guess or examine the underlying advice offered either by Brownstein or the Free Report? Or is the purpose to determine whether there has been some procedural misuse of the advice given? WLR Foods, a number of other cases, make that distinction. I do not see that addressed by the district court in arriving at the decision about whether there has been a waiver, an at-issue waiver, or any waiver at all. And I think that has to be examined first. Could you address that question? And what is the purpose that the Okada parties seek? Is this to test the procedural use of the business judgment rule, or is it rather to test or second guess? Maybe that's not a poor phrase, but I hope you understand the purpose of my question. What Brownstein and Free reports say. Are you wanting to relitigate the Free report? Or are you wanting to relitigate the advice given by Brownstein and Free?
No, we don't.
So what is the procedural problem that you seek to address with respect to the Brownstein request and the Free report?
The procedural problem is each one of these reports, if you will, the Free report, and I'm referring now to the Brownstein-Hyatt advice, were disclosed and they were used offensively. And all the court said, and this is suffused throughout the record, she didn't phrase her determination as you have asked it to be addressed. What she said was, and what we contended, was that by using offensively the Free report and its conclusions to obtain an advantage in, to litigate in, and the Brownstein-Hyatt report, or advice, which was disclosed and is pleaded in the complaint, all we said and all she agreed with was this: you're entitled to look at the information underlying the conclusions in the Free report, and you're entitled to see the documents submitted to the board that preceded the board's receiving advice of Brownstein-Hyatt, that they had to immediately act to redeem the Okada shares, or the Okada or Ruth party shares, and exclude them, to oust them as shareholders in this corporation.
So it sounds like you're in agreement that the district court's order is permitting you to look at the efficacy of the underlying report in Free's case and advice in Brownstein's case. That seems to run contrary to the explanation of the business judgment rule in WLR Foods as an example, which and the Delaware holdings, which say that you can't look beyond or underneath those business judgment decisions. You can look at the procedure behind them to see if there was a failure to satisfy good faith, or there was a failure to, or there was a commission of fraud. Is it your party's, your client's contention that the Brownstein advice was fraudulently based, or that the free report was fraudulently based? Is that what you seek?
We believe and we argued in our motion papers, and we have presented to you in our petition or our answers, that we believe that the underlying information will show, as we have contended from the outset, that there was no urgency and no requirement for immediate action by the board of directors acting for Wynn Resorts to exclude, to oust the Okada parties or the Aruz parties as shareholders and redeem their shares.
Well, there's a difference between the timing of the decision and whether the decision is being tested as fraudulently based or in violation of the business judgment rule because it wasn't in good faith. But I don't see where the district court judge addressed that question.
Well, please keep in mind here, Your Honor, when you consider this question as you have, that what we're speaking of here is what Wynn Resorts did. The district judge said, I'm not making any determination today with respect to the application of the business judgment rule to claims or defenses in this case. And your question, it goes to defenses. What she said was, and what we contend is appropriate, is that by disclosing, by Wynn Resorts disclosing the free report in its entirety and the Brownstein-Hyatt conclusion, by pleading that, they just didn't plead we got advice of counsel. What they pled was the conduct alleged in Mr. Free's report is conduct of a type that when engaged in by a person affiliated with a licensed entity puts the entity's existing and prospective gaming licenses at risk. The board was so advised. They didn't say the board talked to an attorney class before it made a decision. They said we were so advised, and they were so advised that their advice was that the entity's existing and prospective licenses were in jeopardy and justified. And in fact, Mr. Vice phrases as obligated to act immediately to redeem stock and to oust the Aruz parties as shareholders.
Maybe my question isn't being articulated very well, Mr. Morris, but the way I read these cases, the cases in Delaware, the WLR Foods case, there's a distinction between looking at the report, let's take the free report as an example, and testing its underlying factual information, thesis, and conclusions versus the application of the business judgment rule, which tests whether the information the board received was fraudulent or in bad faith. And the concern that I'm asking you to address is it appears as though the district court judge hasn't gone through those analytics as prescribed in that case law, but has instead jumped immediately to the question of whether there's a waiver of that. Well, as I understand the arguments that are being made to this court, if the business judgment rule applies and there isn't a challenge to the procedural deficiency or fraud associated with the Freeze report, then the underlying question of whether it's right or wrong advice or whether it was improperly or factually built isn't something that the court can require production of.
We haven't reached that point yet.
Well, we sort of have. The court's order requires them to produce the underlying stuff.
The court.
That's why we're here.
That's right, because Wynn Resorts, Wynn Resorts the company, not the directors, Wynn Resorts the company, utilized that in the pleading that's before you to make the claims and to justify its activities that it did. That I
well,
think you're right.
On that score, I saw where that argument was made, that this is something that the company can't assert, but there seems to be pretty substantial authority in Amgen that this defense extends to the company, not just to the officers and directors. I mean, in Schoen, we made that pretty clear, that it isn't just the officers and directors that the business judgment rule applies to, it's to the company and the directors, both. So if that's the case, then the question that I come back to is, in properly applying the business judgment rule, are you testing the board of directors' reliance on a report that was fraudulently provided? Or are you testing the underlying conclusions, even if you believe that they're wrong?
We are contesting, I believe, as we have said in our papers, that when resource disclosure and pleading reliance on the Brownstein-Hyatt advice and the receipt and exploitation of the free report constitutes a waiver. The way I interpret some of your questions, you are asking whether the business judgment rule can ever be gone behind if the holder of the privilege for the business judgment rule's privilege voluntarily discloses reliance on the advice that was pleaded here, and which we say, and we believe we're correct on this, rendered fair game and disclosable, and the district court agreed with us on this point, and that it rendered that information disclosable for examination. She didn't say you have to forfeit any protection to the directors of the business judgment rule. She expressly said, I'm not making any determination.
Right. So let me just be clear. If I were sitting in the role of a discovery judge hearing a discovery dispute, which we're kind of doing here, one would normally pose this question. Mr. Morris, with respect to the Brownstein advice, which is pleaded in the complaint so we know what the advice is, what facts, what information do you need to demonstrate that that advice was not given in good faith or was fraudulently provided so as to make the business judgment rule inapplicable? Could you answer that question?
I can't say what that information is any more so than the district court could say that, and she addressed that. She said, I don't know what they consider, but I'm talking to you about, she said, the Wynn parties, I'm talking to you about the documents. For example, the information that went to the board of directors that preceded the Brownstein-Hyatt advice. It preceded the meeting and the appearance of the lawyers there. That's what she said should be disclosed. And she did that. I hate to harp on this, but I sound like I don't mean to be argumentative, but in a sense I am being argumentative. Look, what we have here is a party that said, this is what we got and this is what we relied on. Okay? We relied on advice from our lawyers that says we have to act right now. We have to deprive Mr. Okada and his companies of their shares of stock and redeem them. And give them a note that they can't collect on for 10 years at a severely discounted value. The judge said, in order to determine whether The advice is in any manner, to use the words of the statute, unwarranted. I have to see, and you have to see, you being the Okada parties, you have to see the underlying information that pertains only to the conclusion and the judgment that you pleaded that you had to act immediately to redeem the stock. Now, I don't think I can say much more to you than that.
I'm sorry for taking up so much of your time. I'm sorry for taking up so much of your time.
So it's a pleasure to debate these things. There are cases, I admit, where we would like to have a perfect record. But those occasions, at least in my experience, I've been doing this about 48 years, has yet to arise. We're trying to do the best we can with the information at hand and the law as we know it.
Well, to be clear, as usual, the lawyers in this case, from my perspective, and I bet my colleagues feel the same way, have posited in their briefs and in their arguments what I consider to be three very critical issues of first impression that impact the application and use of the business judgment rule and how it later is evaluated for purposes of a defense in a case. So I commend you for that.
Okay.
Mr. Morris, is your response that you were articulating to Justice Hardesty the same if this document had not been attached to the subsequent? If the document had not been attached to the subsequent complaint, is your response the same, or do you change your response if this document is not attached in terms of a waiver or?
The document, I would suggest, the document is pleaded, or the conclusions from it are pleaded, and the entire report was attached to the complaint.
And what I'm asking, if it was not, would your position still be the same as to the Brownstein advice or whatever?
No, it would not be the same. If the advice had not been disclosed as advice relied on to reach a particular decision that was adverse to us, I would not be contesting that. I would not be contesting the underlying information. If the free report had remained anonymous, if it had not been sent, for example, attached to the complaint and sent to the Securities and Exchange Commission and immediately to the Wall Street Journal, so all of the investment community could know immediately.
How could the board of directors or the company invoke the business judgment rule if it does not disclose the existence of the advice or the free report?
They can say as many boards of directors do, in courts in which the business judgment rule is sustained as a defense to director liability. We talked to lawyers, and we considered all information available to us, and we made a judgment. That case is distinguishable from this one, and it goes to an issue addressed in two of the cases that are cited in the...
Well, let's test that thesis a moment with regard to lawyer advice. You're suggesting that the business judgment rule would apply if a company came in and the board came in and said, we got advice from a lawyer, and that's the basis under which we made our decision. And nobody gets to know what that advice was? What if the advice was, you shouldn't be doing this?
Well, if the advice was, you shouldn't be doing it, I suppose.
But what you're saying is it's not even disclosed. But if you disclose it, you've waived it. Is that the approach you're taking?
No. Well, in point of fact, I think, I'm not sure we're talking about the same thing here. It's one thing to say we had available to us information that included advice of counsel, and we took that and we made a decision, and you have the decision before us. That isn't the case here. What this company did was it used offensively It said, we got advice from our outside counsel on a specific point that is an issue and hotly contested here, that we had to act immediately to redeem the Okada stock and exclude the Okada parties as shareholders. That's the distinction between this case and a couple of the Delaware cases you may have been referring to, and that Mr. Weiss puts in his reply, Converge and Toys R Us, when the court said, you can't get behind the business judgment rule just because the board, as the statute allows them to, consulted professionals. What those cases did not say is what's present here. When you take what was disclosed to you by the Free Report and the advice given to you by Brownstein Hyatt, and you put the substance of that advice in your pleading, you put everything in the Free Report in the way of conclusions in your pleading, and then you say to your opponent, the person affected by this, tough luck. The business judgment rule says we can use this offensively, and we can use the business judgment rule defensively. Now, I don't know how you could square that, Your Honor, quite frankly, with your opinion in Wardlay. I don't. What you said in Wardlay and what has been repeated countlessly in other cases citing and relying on Wardlay, which to my knowledge remains the law in Nevada, is that if you selectively disclose a portion of legal advice, if you selectively disclose a portion of a work product report, or call it a opinions report. In this case, it was everything that was disclosed with respect to the report. You have given a subject matter waiver. Not a wholesale waiver, a subject matter waiver with the other side, so the other side can test your reliance on the advice you pleaded as a basis to make the claims you did in this case, and what you got from Lewis Free in the Free Report that you incorporated into your complaint and then dispersed worldwide for everyone to know, which was your intention, that the Okada parties are unsuitable and they cannot be associated with our company. Which, as I point out, is somewhat unusual. Gaming control authorities have taken no action here, and as we cite in the supplemental portion here, Okada parties were found suitable to be licensed in January 2016. That's 4 years after this flap arose that we've been litigating since 2013. So I would say to you, Your Honor, this wasn't done as you seem to suggest, Your Honor, Justice Hardesty, this wasn't done just as a whim by the district court. With respect to the Free Report, the district court examined what she described as, and we put in the papers, a statistically...
I have not intended, if it came across that way, to suggest for one moment that the district court acted on a whim. I don't even believe I use that word. What I do believe I have suggested is that the analytics associated with how one applies the business judgment rule may not be present in the district court's order.
Well, the court we know did look at and examined in camera thousands of documents put on a privilege log by the Wynn parties. And with respect to the contention that those documents are immune from discovery, because they are privileged, attorney-client, or work product. She found, after examining those documents, the opposite. She said there has been an at-issue waiver with respect to attorney-client privilege, and with respect to your question, Your Honor, she said, this report and what's underlying it that I have looked at does not support the proposition that it was prepared in anticipation of litigation. It was prepared to gather facts and present those facts to the board of directors. And what happened here was the conclusions that were drawn from whatever facts it is that Mr. Free reviewed to draw the conclusion that these parties were unsuitable were then made fair game to the defendant who's being affected by this, or the defendants, to determine whether the information that was examined and asserted to support the conclusions that these folks are unsuitable can be withheld from them after having disclosed and used, offensively again, the Free report and the Brownstein Hyatt report. So I appreciate that there's an intersection here between the business judgment rule as it applies to directors to shield them from liability. But as we point out in our papers, and as I'm here to argue to you today, it is Wynn Resorts that commenced this litigation, and it put this information in issue. It asked the district court, and eventually, depending on the outcome of this case, may come here on appeal and ask you to determine that the to determine that the documents, the information underlying that report, underlying that advice, did not support it, and therefore could not have been legitimately acted on, and the board of directors would not have been warranted in acting on. And their activities at the moment aren't in question. It's Wynn Resorts. Wynn Resorts said, we want a declaratory judgment from you, Your Honor, that says we did the right thing and we don't have to answer for it. You have to accept it, because in our articles of incorporation, it says we can do this. And they pled what they did and the basis for it, and now they're saying to you today, well, the business judgment rule means we don't have to answer for any of that. So, unless you have further questions.
Any further questions?
I think my time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Morris.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Bice, you have 9 minutes. Mr. Bice, while you're waiting to get up there, perhaps you could address Mr. Morris's comments on the Wardley case, the application to the facts of this particular case, and the impact of your other arguments.
I will. the reason that the business judgment rule is the linchpin of both of these orders ties Justice Gibbons into your question about Wardley, because it addresses what is the standard of review and what is discoverable information. So, you know, with all due respect to my friend Mr. Morris, I think he is just simply rewriting the district court's actual order. If you look at what they argue to the district court, which is at pages 1213, I'm dealing with the Brownstein appendix right now, 1213 through 1216 of the appendix, their entire argument is that the business judgment rule does not apply to the corporation that protects individual directors from personal liability. Quote, it does not protect the company itself from the consequences of the director's decisions on behalf of the company. That was the entire linchpin of that order. And let me make this additional point. At 1216, this was Mr. Peek's argument on behalf of the Okada parties. After making this lengthy argument about how the business judgment rule doesn't apply, he then says, once Wynn's misstatement of the law regarding the business judgment rule is corrected and stripped, there's nothing left of their opposition to protect against producing these documents. And that is exactly what the district, that's exactly what they asked her for, and that is exactly what the order provides. The order is at appendix page 1248, and on 1249, this is the district court's ruling. It's not the ruling that Mr. Morris just characterized. It's not about Wardley, according to the district court, and at issue waiver. This is the district court's ruling. By asserting the business judgment rule as a defense, the members of the board of directors of Wynn Resorts have put at issue certain advice they received by Brownstein Hyatt. By asserting it as a defense, the district court says, the district court conducted no Wardley analysis whatsoever with respect to the Brownstein documents. And in fact, she then goes on to list the various sweeping categories of documents that are now, by virtue of the business judgment rule, supposedly discoverable. Now, Justice Hardesty, to your question of Mr. Morris about what's the so-called procedural problem, or are you just trying to get behind the advice that was given? Well, the district court record gives us the answer to that at page 1218 of the argument on the motion to compel. This is, again, the Okada party's argument. So, the jury will have to decide whether the action of the company was pretextual or absolutely required under prevailing gaming law. We are entitled to test the latter on proof of the former that this was pretextual. They go on arguing throughout this hearing in front of the district court. They are entitled to test whether or not, or dispute, that Brownstein was right, and I think Mr. Morris largely acknowledged that. He wants to contend, well, we want to impeach the input that they got. There's no procedural problem here. They haven't identified, they haven't said that Mr. Raj or Mr. Silver or former Judge Spree aren't qualified, that they didn't have the qualifications to do this work. They didn't have the ability to advise the board on these matters. And the board should therefore, the board knew facts that somehow meant it was unwarranted to rely upon. Where I did find it interesting, one of the comments Mr. Morris said, I think I wrote it down. It's not the advice that's unwarranted under the statute. The question is whether reliance is unwarranted because the directors know something outside of that advice that makes reliance unwarranted. That's what the statute is talking about. Under their formulation of the business judgment rule, it is simply stripped away. It is utterly meaningless because under their scenario, they are entitled to impeach and attack any advice that the board gets and get behind that advice.
Mr. Bice, the same question I asked Mr. Morris. Do we need to separate this into two pots because of the declaratory relief claim and the attachment of one of the documents or some documents to that claim?
Yeah, well, Justice Douglas, I made a note about your question, and Mr. Morris has said that the outcome would be different if it wasn't attached. With all due respect, under the district court's ruling, it wouldn't be different. Under the district court's ruling that was urged by the Okada parties.
What is your position as to that question in terms of we have a document that's attached to a complaint, from that point, excluding Brownstein and their advice on the other?
Correct.
What do we do with that?
All right, let me turn then to the free documents. It is true that we attached the free report to the complaint. And it is true that the board had to disclose that, in the board's view, it had to disclose why it was taking the action it was taking. This is not insignificant action, as the court can well imagine. What we did was we disclosed the free report. The district court later said, well, the appendix of the free report is part of the report, so you should have to disclose that as well, which we have done. So any documents that the board actually considered from free have been produced. But that's not what the district court's order is. And again, this is respectfully to my colleague, Mr. Morris. He says that I misspoke, that it wasn't a wholesale ruling. Again, here's the district court order on free. This is at appendix page 2. The district court rules that our claims of attorney-client, first of all, our claims of work product were completely rejected on everything. Second of all, paragraph 2 of her order says, our attorney-client review is overruled as to all documents for the time period leading up to and including February 22, 2012, when the free report and appendix were thereto were completed. All documents have, so it is a wholesale waiver up to the preparation of the report, according to the district court, by virtue of the fact the district court has said, because we attach the report. Now, with all due respect, actually, I think that the district court's ruling is much broader than that. By sheer fact that the board considered it, according to the district court's ruling on Brownstein, everything has been waived. But on the, with respect to the free documents, the free spoken documents, the district court's order is that the claims of attorney-client privilege are overruled. They're arguing, well, under Wardley, you have waived the attorney-client privilege by submitting those documents to or attaching that document to the complaint. Again, our point on this is the Wardley analysis was never actually performed by the district court. The district court didn't address that. The district court swept aside all of our claims of work product privilege, which, of course, the analysis of that we would submit is fundamentally different than questions about waiver of attorney-client privilege. And again, the district court's order is sweeping all documents that predate, that go in, not only that go into creation of the report, that just predate the report of the work performed by the free spoken firm. Everything, according to the district court, has now been waived by virtue of the fact that both we considered the report that the board did, and two, that it was attached. And again, that's our objection. We complied with the district court's ruling that because we attached the report, the appendix that went into its creation should be produced to them. We complied with that request. But this one, the one we are challenging, we submit, goes far beyond that, far beyond what Wardley would even permit if the court were to rule that it was a waiver. But here's where I come back to, I submit to this court, that the business judgment rule and the district court's mistake about it is the linchpin of all this, because the court has to decide what type of information is relevant or discoverable. Because if the party is allowed to pierce behind and peek behind and challenge the underlying advice, that's their entire argument for why it was discoverable or why it was relevant, regardless of the question of privilege or not. But if this court agrees with Wynn Resorts, and quite frankly, I submit, agrees with every other court that has actually considered the question of does the business judgment rule apply to this type of decision, then getting behind the board's decision was improper in the first place. And the attempt to pierce the decision through this discovery was improper in the first place. I see I'm out of time. I thank the court.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bice. Mr. Morris, thank you both for your spirited arguments, fine briefs in this matter. This matter will stand submitted. We're in recess until